This episode of Local Runners Podcast is sponsored by BucketZone.com, where there are hundreds of athletic races listed each year in the UK. If you're an event organiser and would like to discover the benefits of listing your next race for entry, why not visit BucketZone.com to find out more, or give them a call and mention the Local Runners Podcast. Listing is absolutely free and puts your race within reach of over 200,000 registered UK athletes. To find your next race, or to find out more about listing your event for entry, visit BucketZone.com. BucketZone.com. List, search, and enter events online.
Welcome to episode 28, a bonus episode of the Local Runners Podcast, the podcast by runners, for runners. We are your hosts. I'm Katie Kay.
I'm Callum Parkinson.
I'm Sean Warburton.
And I'm Dave Norman.
So, many will know that last week, Keith Halligan of Hyde Village Striders passed away. Like everyone, we just completely shocked and saddened to hear this. Keith was extremely popular in the running community and well beyond, especially in the local area. He always had a smile on his face and a brilliant and often dry sense of humour. Myself and Cal trained with Keith at Hyde, and he would often be seen out most days training on the roads of Hyde and G Cross, and he actually ran the same loop I run, actually, although Keith ran it anti-clockwise to me, which was madness. I did tell him that was madness. So our thoughts and hearts go out to Debbie and Keith's wife, as well as friends and family, and he certainly won't be forgotten, so we'll miss you, mate.
Last weekend saw the National Road Relays take place in Sutton Coalfield. There was a thrilling race in the men's 12-stage relay, with Tunbridge overtaking the long-time leaders Highgate in the final half mile to win by just 13 seconds after 4 hours of racing. Bedford and County took the bronze medals a further minute behind. Leeds were the first Northern team to finish in fifth place, with Salford flying the flag for the local area in ninth place overall and the second Northern team. Salford Harriers led the ladies' six-stage relay from start to finish with a completely dominant performance, winning by 4 minutes in 2:14.27. Highgate took the silver medals, with Basingstoke taking the bronze. To highlight Salford's dominance, Eleanor Bolton and Anna Brace-Girdle were the fastest two legs and the only runners on the day to break 30 minutes, with Sinead Bent the second fastest short leg, her time only bettered by Gemma Steele of Charnwood. The fastest long leg in the men's race was Nick Gulab of Belgrave Harriers in 25:23, with Thomas Keane of Cambridge running the fastest short leg 15:10. The only local athlete to run inside the fastest 10 legs of the day was William Onek of Sale, who ran the 10th fastest short leg with a time of 15:34.
Okay, in our last episode, Glenn mentioned about not running with a watch and it not needing to be on Strava. Glenn made it clear that he has running diaries from 1979 to present day, which he uses to review his running and races. And now technology has come on, we're able to view our training through Strava, Garmin Connect, etc. But this does come with some social pressure and questioning if we're running fast enough, if we're doing enough miles, if we're climbing enough, etc. And this is something that Sophie Wood mentioned in her episode. And we all know of people who have started to make the Strava private so that they can manage the training without feeling the pressure of what people think. So the question to the team, I guess, is do you feel the pressure from socials like Strava that influences how you train, and what have you done to combat it? So let's go to Sean first for this.
It's quite easy for me, this one. Absolutely zero pressure. I just don't sense that at all. I see the kudos, and people mainly comment on races, don't they? They generally don't get people commenting in. So I purely use Strava, me, as a training diary. You know, that's what I do. I use it so I can go back, and depending on how this next week goes, I'll look back and change it. But no pressure whatsoever, me, from Strava at all. All positive.
Dave?
Yeah, similar story with me, really. I used to record all my training, first of all, in a little paper diary back in my early days. Then I moved on to Excel spreadsheets, so we're going up in the world. But since I started using Strava, I just discontinued that. All my training now is just stored on Strava for me to reference back to. And I find it really useful, just looking back at various routes I've done. You can look back at races you've done before if you do them again, and then see how you've performed. Similarly with some of the loops you use for your tempo runs, you can compare you know, your most recent run with previous runs. So I just find it a really useful tool, and I don't find any pressure at all. You know, some people say, oh, I feel the pressure to run a bit quicker on my easy runs because what will people think if I run too slowly? Doesn't bother me at all. If I need to run an 8-minute mile or slower, I will run it. Doesn't bother me at all. Callum?
For me, when I first got onto Strava, I remember from my Manchester Marathon, I actually wrote out every single session that was on my training plan, and I marked out Manchester Marathon, hashtag number one. And then I had everything, and then someone commented on it and they were going, you look like an idiot, or something along them lines, and I went, oh, right, I'll stop. And then literally after the Manchester Marathon, or sometime after, I started just to leave it easy runs, or just classed as easy runs, and I just named the warm-ups and sessions. But one thing I did not long ago was I was looking at other people's runs and I was thinking, they used to be as fast as me and now they're faster, and what are they doing? What aren't I doing right? There must be something that I'm doing wrong. So I always look at people in and around me or just a little bit better to try and look at what they're doing. But I don't really feel any pressure from it. I think my own personal pressure that I put on it is more than enough to try and drive me onto the race goals, as long as I don't look at my watch in a 5K, as I've been told off numerous times now. But what about you, Katie?
No, I think similar to what you guys have said, specifically like you said, Sean, I think everything goes on Strava for me, and I don't feel any pressure at all. It's my diary, so I can look back what I've done. I mean, even if I do a walk, it goes on Strava, and it's not, you know, just so I can keep a bit of a measure in terms of, you know, what I've been doing, and I can look back. And again, I do find it interesting to look at what other people are doing, but no, I certainly don't feel any pressure. So yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like we said, Sophie, for example, has hers on private because she feels that, she can feel that pressure. But maybe, I don't know, maybe it's when you get to a certain, you know, you're an elite runner, maybe you feel that pressure, I don't know, but certainly for me, I don't feel that.
And I don't put, like, strength work on it. I see some people, like, add, like, gym, and I can't be arsed doing that because we're going into it and adding it manually, whereas with running, you just start your watch and it's done.
Yeah.
And I don't really name my runs. And the only ones I name are like track sessions and tempos. Just so when I'm going through, I can see what sessions I've done. Because otherwise, it's just a run, in it, you know. So yeah, I don't add anything like that. Sometimes I'd walks, like when I'm going to the lakes next week with Benny. I might add some walks on there with Strava, me and Ben.
We've talked about our own Strava accounts, Sean. But do you pay much attention to other people?
I do, yeah. So people who are similar to me, so people who I know who are running Wrexham, for example, and I know are going to be shooting for a similar time to me, I do have a look at what they're doing, especially at the minute because I'm in taper and I'm over panicking about everything. And if I see someone else go and do a little tempo run, I think, whoa, I wonder if I should be doing a tempo run. I'm going to be every legged if I don't. There's a temptation to do that, but I very rarely actually copy someone's plan, especially at this late stage now. Yeah. But I will learn from people as well. Like we'll be talking to Johnny later, so we'll be interested to see what sort of stuff he does in the marathon build up. And I think it's the same with quick runners. You look at what they're doing and you want to learn a bit from it, don't you?
Yeah, I don't think you ever stop learning. I think from my point of view, I've been running that long now, that I'm probably not going to be as influenced by what other people do on Strava. But I do find it interesting, and I probably pay more attention to those sort of unusual training elements that you see on Strava.
Yeah.
So I think people doing a little bit of eccentric training, I just find it quite interesting seeing the extremes of what different people do.
So you go to Strava for comedy value, are you saying that?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
It must admit, I do like looking at Dave Barrett's long run sometimes. And Cookie, he's done some big sessions on Park Road. You know, you look at them and they're eye-watering, aren't they?
Yeah.
I do like that, and, you know, it's nothing better than getting back from a run, I don't think, like part run or your long run, and just looking at what everyone else has been doing. That's part of my weekend, that.
Yeah. I mean, with a lot of those people like Cookie you've just mentioned there, I mean, you know, just the mental aspect of running 28 miles on the Park Road loop.
That's hardcore.
That is hardcore. And you mentioned Dave Barrett, the pace of his runs. I mean, I'm never going to try and copy what he does, but I look at the pace of those long runs and I'm thinking, wow, if only I could run like that.
Yeah, so comedy value and educational at the same time, I think. Yeah. Okay, so moving on to a bit of an overview of races and training. I'll go first. So again, still not much from me, really. I am still struggling with my calf. It's driving me absolutely mad. So sometimes feels fine. Tried to pick up the speed a little bit this week. And then noticed today it's been pulling, so I had to abandon a off-road trail run and walk. So I'm still not sure what's really going on with it, but anyway, just trying to listen to my body and be mindful and slow down when I need to. But I've got Stride Through the Woods coming up next week, so hopefully give that a bash, and Dovestone Diamond booked on that, and then it'll be the tour. So yeah, and that's me, Dave.
It's been another positive week, really. I've managed to get 60 miles of running, which I never thought I'd be able to say when I had that calf tear a few weeks ago. So, progressed really, really quickly. Really, really pleased with how it's responded. Did wake up with a bit of a cold on Saturday morning. I didn't feel great on Friday either, so I actually took Friday off. And then Saturday I woke up a bit groggy and thought, I probably need to consider taking another day off here. But as the day went on, I felt better, and then went out for a few miles on Friday and I felt okay. So I seem to have got over that quite quickly, which is good. Seem to have nipped that in the bud. Got out and did a really enjoyable long run with Sean and a few of the other lads on Sunday. Just looking at sort of hopefully penciling some races in the diary. May even consider doing Stride Through the Woods yet. Mm-hmm. Callum?
So after we recorded with Glenn last week, did 6x3 minutes on the cycle track. First time on the cycle track for quite a while. It was a really hard session. I had Dan Kavanagh right behind me for the first four, and then the last two, he just kept beating me. I've got to say, at the beginning, because we had some Salford Harriers on the track, there was a point where all the East Cheshire Harriers were walking one way and all the Salford Harriers were walking the other. I thought it was like something out of Warriors.
like a shootout.
But it looked like you's had a good session. I'm sure Sean will touch on that. And then on the Thursday, did 12x1 minutes. Started to introduce double run days a little bit more now. So just doing 6 miles in the morning, then doing 3 a little bit later. So hoping that starts to help towards the tour. Unfortunately, last Friday, I tested positive with COVID after my son bringing it into the house. And for that, I missed the national relays. Really gutted about that. I don't think I'm going to get the opportunity again with some of the talent that's coming into East Cheshire. I think I'll be well out of that 12. So gutted to have let the team down, but Dan Kavanagh, the guy who was passing me, did really well, and as all the team did, it looked like a really good day out. On the Sunday, I copied the local lads' run, made sure I went out a little bit after them, so weren't overtaking them, you know, because they're not as fast as me. But I wanted to test some gels, so I've tested the SIS blackcurrant gel. I had half of it and felt, it's horrible. So I've got some High Five gels off Katie. I've got some Mountain Fuel off Sean to try. Training's just been the same. Tested negative yesterday and today, which is why I'm in here tonight. Haven't had any issues with COVID. Training stayed near enough exactly the same. I've lost a little bit of weight. I'm not too sure if that's to do with COVID or just what I've been eating. So looking to eat a little bit more. I did polish off half a packet of chocolate hobnobs the other day. So
it's cutting out your crunchy cornflakes, Callum.
That's the thing. I am missing crunchy nut and cocoa pops mixed in together. And then started to read a sports psychology book called How Bad Do You Want It? It was recommended by Mike Holness and Michelle Vaughan. So hopefully that'll start helping with racing and 5Ks and just pushing that a little bit further. That's it from me. What about you, Sean?
Well, this is it now. I'm in the taper zone, aren't I? You know, the worst place anybody can possibly be ever in the region. So, Last week was actually a relatively normal volume week and session-wise, with the exception of just cutting the long run down a little bit. So I was on that run with Dave. I think I did 17 miles, just over 7 minute miling for most of the run. So felt good that, and it was a really good group, good weather. So you can tell spring's coming back now. We also, as Callum touched on, we went sit here at home. We at the Salford contingent that trained there can't get on the track, so thanks to East Cheshire for hosting us and letting us use the cycle track over there. So we did our 800s over there that night. I can tell why you boys are getting so fit over there, because it was brutal on that, yeah. And the wind as well, really windy coming around there. So it definitely felt tougher on there than the track, if I'm honest. So maybe there's something in that, you know, if you're training for a road race, perhaps train on the road. So yeah, definitely noticed that, but it was nice to be back on the track this week, doing a normal session. I'll probably do half a session next week, and I've got the Salford 10k in the morning. It's a little bit close to the marathon, really, in a perfect world. So we're 9 days out, so it'll be eight days tomorrow, won't it? Yeah, okay. So that's what I've lined up, and that's what I put in the plan, and that's what I'm going to do. And we'll see how that goes, and the goal's the same. I'm hoping for sub 240 in Wrexham in less than 2 weeks' time.
Maranoia's truly
well and truly kicks in. So all I'm doing at the minute now is putting weight on and losing all my fitness. And that is going really well.
Welcome to the marathon taper.
Yeah, so I should be able to at least knock out a 5.5 hour marathon in a couple of weeks, I reckon. But yeah, that's it from me.
Okay, now on to the interview of the episode. This year, our guest has ran a PB of 62.20 in the half marathon in Seville, ranking him third in the country and first V35, which was just 21 days after running a 10K PB of 28.30 in Valencia, ranking him fourth in the country and again first V35. He has other PBs of 13.46 in the 5K and 2.10.03 in the marathon, along with numerous wins to his name. In the last 4 weeks, he's won two local races, the Wimslow Half Marathon in 64.24 and the Manchester Marathon in 2.10.46. Please welcome Johnny Miller.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Okay, Johnny, just to kick off, can you give us a bit more of an insight into Johnny as a person and not just a runner? What do you do with your time when you're not running?
Well, I'd love to say he's really, really interesting guy and very exciting, but the reality is it's not that. You know, after training and work, you know, it doesn't leave much time left over. So, yeah, there's not much going on, I'll be honest. I enjoy going out for walks with the dog. Football's obviously a big love of mine, you know. So it's kind of recovering, I guess. That's what I do when I'm not running and working, I guess.
Excellent. Okie dokies. And I think if I've got this right, in your early running career, you were coached by Dave Evans, is that right? And had a successful time as a junior. Can you tell us a bit more about training and how that works as a junior?
Yeah, I was with Dave, I think, for going on nearly 10 years. He obviously played a massive role in where I am today. And I wouldn't be there without Dave and his input. So I moved over to Liverpool Harriers when I was 17, as soon as I started to learn to drive, and initially I trained with Lowell Doby, who was more of an 800, 1500 metre coach, and again, really good for my development. I think that sort of gave me the speed, you know, and that's maybe why I've got a good range today. But I was sort of itching to do the longer distance stuff, and you know, I moved over to Dave Evans' group, who at the time had Phil McGlory, Simon Mills, Jimmy Boardman, some really good characters and some great runners. And I guess it kind of just went from strength to strength, really. Dave obviously got me running some, shall we say, serious mileage. And yeah, I guess it worked really well for me. And I was with Dave for a long time. And it was just a shame. We had moments when we had really good groups in Liverpool, some guys dropping in, obviously, for uni and stuff. But overall, especially when people like John McCall left, we just didn't have the numbers in Liverpool, unfortunately, then.
Okay. So how old were you when you started running?
Ooh, I mean, I was sort of playing football and I was swimming up until the age of 16, maybe running once or twice a week. You know, I was one of those kids that kind of did everything in school, yeah. Whatever sport it was I'd do, I'd sort of throw myself into. But it wasn't really then. I started going to university when I started taking my run a lot more seriously. You know, knocked football on the head. Wasn't going to end up playing for Liverpool, unfortunately. and obviously kind of realised then that, you know, I was a decent runner, I was running at a reasonable level.
Yeah.
And, you know, I only made my last year of English schools on the track. Had some pretty disastrous runs in the cross, you know, and that kind of, that's why I always say to young kids now, you know, it's how you develop into a senior athlete and go through that sort of under 20, under 23 age group, you know, where you come out, you know, and if you stick at it and keep working hard, you come through it. So, yeah, that, I started running properly, I guess, when I was more sort of 17, when I moved to local areas.
Cool. Okay. Okay, and I saw a really interesting video on, I think it was on social media, about where you talked about your diagnosis. Is it of ITP in 2014? I'll let you spell out what that stands for. But for those that don't know what ITP is, can you explain a little bit more about this, how you became aware of that you actually had it, and how you managed to live with it and still manage your running career?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite embarrassing. I don't really, ITP, immune thrombocytopenia, that's a word I can't pronounce. Purpura, can't pronounce that one. I'm not great with pronunciations, you'll find out on this podcast.
I didn't even try.
So it's just ITP, and it basically means that I have low level platelets in my blood, so I don't clot. You know, and I guess the average person has 150,000 above.
Right.
Mine's sort of stick around the 100,000 mark now, which is fine. I can, you know, that's on medication daily, and I can live a normal, healthy life with that. That's not an issue. But at first, we think it's a reaction to vaccinations that I had when I went to Kenya training. As I say, it's idiopathic, if that's pronounced right again, which means they don't really know the cause, but that's the most likely outcome or what it was. And basically, my immune system started attacking itself, and it started the vision in my head, which I kind of see as Pac-Man, going around eating all my, you know, platelets, you know, which causes your blood to clot. So I first noticed it in Kenya, and I'd wake up in the morning, I had sort of blood in my teeth and my gums.
I think
gums,
that's all I've seen a picture.
And obviously a bit strange, kind of what's going on. Kept it to myself for a day or two, and then obviously told my roommate Ross what was going on, and he said, "You need to go to the sort of staff here and find out what's happening." So I went to obviously the medical team of British Athletics, physios, whatever. And then before I know it, I'm going down to Eldoret for tests and get my blood checked. And it was, I didn't really think much of it at the time, but it was literally, this was fed back to John Rogers back in the UK. And he sort of said, like, you need to come home. So the next day I was on a flight back from Kenya. And that was where it kind of hit home. I was like, oh, this is quite serious. They wouldn't be flying me home the next day if it wasn't. But it was kind of because my platelets were so low. If I fell on a run out in the middle of nowhere, it's a low risk, but there's a chance I could bleed to, you know, and be in trouble. So I come back home obviously for loads of tests, and my platelets at this point had dropped down to zero, which basically means there's less than 1,000 platelets in my body. So any sort of accident or something like that, I was in, you know, I guess it was quite serious at the time. And then that was, you know, it was the medication I was put on initially was prednisolone and steroid, and that then caused bone density loss, muscle loss, which I'd never had a stress fracture up until that point in my career. I ended up having two stress fractures and a stress reaction in within a year.
Wow.
And that's what set me back rather than the actual condition. So obviously come off that medication pretty quick. And now I'm, you know, I take medication daily, but you know, if you're asthmatic or something like that, you take medication daily. So it's just something I have to live with now. And I guess that's the quick way to end the story of, you know, what went on for years, I guess. But yeah, it's just part of it.
But it's manageable now.
Yeah,
exactly. Great. Okay. And I saw not long ago you did cross country, and you said that you enjoyed running without a carbon plated shoe in sight for a change. So just wondering, did you actually enjoy that cross country? Is it something that you do enjoy?
Yeah, I mean, I think people said to me, I thought you hated cross country. I've never said I hate cross country. I just hated the way I ran on cross country. So you know, it'd be frustrating because I'd get ready for Liverpool every year, and you know, I'd maybe go and do like, you know, Leeds Abbey Dash or Great South and run well. And then it comes across, and lads that have been beating on the roads would be minutes ahead of me. I'm like, what's going on? So I think we all have different strengths as runners and things like that, and obviously mine isn't cross. But I think after London last year, and you know, the disappointments obviously of last year, I kind of just wanted to go back to basics. I wanted to go back to why I enjoyed running, and that was racing.
Yeah.
No pressure, no expectation, no didn't have to worry about splits and times. I just wanted to go and run. And you know, for me, that was going to do Manchester Cross Country League and Shirley's Park. I got very lucky, it was bone dry that day for Shirley's Park. I'm sure, Dave, you've been on that as well, on days when it's been awful. I got lucky, and then Liverpool, you know, I wasn't quite fit enough on the day, you know, I was still building back up after the marathon. And you can't go to Liverpool not quite fit because you get found out, you know, so. But that wasn't the aim, it was just literally to get fit and kind of enjoy my running again, which then it worked for me. So I'd love to go back and do cross country again next year, hopefully.
Yeah, fab. Love a bit of cross country. Okay, and moving on from that then, what's your favourite kind of running? So is it on the track, on the road, hills, flat, what is it?
I love racing on the road. You can't beat it, you know, it's just so pure. you know, and especially now as I get older, I definitely prefer the road to the track. I guess day-to-day running though, trails, you know, I just love getting out on the trails and the canals, you know, forest paths and things like that, and on the hills. So yeah, day-to-day running, definitely the trails.
Fab. Okay, and I see that you offer online coaching. Mm-hmm. So what does that look like in practice, and did you get loads of inquiries after Manchester Marathon?
Yeah, it's been a busy couple of weeks, especially the time of going on holiday as well. So it's, yeah, like we looked at the Google report and, you know, the most of the day were great. So I'm lucky I've got a really good team around me there now as well, so it's kind of exciting time for that as well. But yeah, like we work with different runners of varying abilities, you know, the majority of recreational runners, but we do work with, you know, club runners as well. And it's something that started in 2013 now, so I've been doing it for a long time. It's kind of grown with me over the years as well, you know. And yeah, we, as I say, different options. There's obviously plans where someone will just want, I want a 12-week training plan, we'll give them a 12-week plan and off they go. And that works for some people, and I totally understand why it doesn't work for some other people, but especially if you've got a set job and set hours and things like that. But obviously in terms of the flexibility, working with people on a weekly basis, mm-hmm. we can make changes based on how they're feeling and things like that, and adjust it, you know, and I guess follow the runner rather than follow the plan. So yeah, it's good, and I get a real buzz out of it, a real kick out of it when, you know, I see, you know, someone, 3 hours seems to be the magical number, that barrier, running sub 3 hour marathon, you know, helping guys or girls aiming for this, working full time with busy families and stuff like that. I really love it, you know, and I enjoy helping them do that as well.
Brilliant. Okay, and a little, if you want to give yourself a little plug, so where would people find out more?
jmcoaching.co.uk. You know, we're on Instagram and stuff as well.
Fabulous. Okay, and trust me to be asking this question as I'm sat here with a glass of wine. But we understand that you're teetotal, so what made you come to this decision? And do you ever feel the pressure to have a drink, you know, from, you know, maybe after Manchester Marathon, for example, if people are wanting to celebrate with you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know is the answer. There's probably a couple of things. I remember going to Glasgow on a football tournament when I was probably about 15-ish, I'd say, and someone got a crate of beers in, and it was Stella. Which I believe his wife beat him to donuts. So it's probably the worst possible thing you can try, and it was horrible, the taste. It just did nothing for me. And then I guess after that, when we living on the Wirral, you had to pay quite a lot of money in taxis and stuff to go for a night out in Liverpool, because you had the tunnel and stuff. So I was always just a designated driver, and, you know, everyone would pay fiver in to the car.
Yeah.
So you go out, not spend any money on drinks, make some money. Bonus. At that age, it was like, yeah, happy days. And I guess, I don't know, I've never really done it. It's never bothered me. I'm not really, I don't know. And I guess I'm too stubborn now to anyway. And all my friends, they're not bothered. They know now that I'm not going to drink, so they've given up trying, I think. So yeah, no peer pressure.
So it's not for health reasons or anything then?
Not particularly, no. Something you've never got into. Because I think a good balance, obviously key. Balance, Dave.
Pint of meat, haven't
they? He is drinking a pint of Coke, so he is behaving. No, it's not necessarily for health reasons, because obviously, you know, it's all good in moderation.
Yeah, okay. Brilliant. So that's all my questions, but I've got a couple of listener questions. So first of all, I've got a few from Dylan Mackey from Hyde Village Striders. So he says, between your runs, in your opinion, what's the best recovery method?
I think it starts with nutrition. I think getting your fueling right, you know, once you're recovering, as soon as you finish the run, you know, you're staying hydrated throughout the day. I think they're the basics that you can do, no matter if you're working full time or not.
Yeah.
Sleep is another one, really important. That's when your body's going to adapt and grow to the stimulus of training. So that's obviously really important. And then obviously, again, if you've got the luxury, you can do things like nap in the afternoon, stay up your feet as much as possible. They're obviously the bonus, you know, things like that. And then we start looking at massage and stuff. But for me, nutrition and hydration is the key to kind of make sure you're getting all the good stuff in, really, to make sure you recover as best as you can.
So the basics.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. And then he also says, how do you cope with being looked up to by so many runners, including me?
It's nice. You know, I'm not going to say, I guess it's a privilege. I try not to think about it too much, or, you know, but again, that's maybe little things where we have to share a bit of training on Strava and things like that. You know, it's nice, and it's because people do look up to it, and I understand that, and, you know, that's nice as well. So I try not to give it too much thought, but yeah, it's nice.
Brilliant. Okay, thanks for answering those. I'm going to hand over to Callum.
Cheers, Katie. Welcome, Johnny.
Thank you.
So I'm going to start off by asking a question about London. Cool. So you've raced London Marathon a few times. What were these experiences like?
Yeah, London's an amazing marathon. You know, it's obviously one of the majors. And I think in the UK calendar, it's obviously one of the highlights. Everyone kind of looks forward to it and builds up to it. There's always a really good elite field. So I love London, and I think it's just a great experience, and all runners should have it on their bucket list to go and do it at least once. So, yeah, I highly recommend it, obviously.
How was it as an elite travelling down? What sort of special treatment did you get?
Well, it's all been upgraded now. We go to a special hotel out in Eaton Way, so we're not just at the Tower Hotel anymore. But yeah, again, like New York Roadrunners, another one, they really look after you. You know, you're really made to feel special, you know, and, you know, as I say, there's people like Eliud Kipchoge and stuff there in the hotel with you, meal times and stuff, and it's quite surreal at times. But yeah, really well looked after, and obviously all the transport and to and from the start and things like that. I don't think you realise how lucky that you are to have that and how appreciative of you are. You know, you don't have to get a bus, certainly for something like New York as well, and you have to get a bus over to Staten Island. It's just to kind of get ferried across to the start, it's really good. But London definitely will look after you really well.
Cool. So what advice would you give to someone who's doing London Marathon for the first time this year, like me?
Enjoy it. Enjoy the experience, because, as I say, you might not do it many times in your career. And the crowd, you go thing, you know, different parts of the course, and the crowd, the noise in the crowd really does make the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. And as I say, you know, there's so many people all look forward to it and train together for it and work towards it. You know, I'd start looking forward to it and be excited for it now, because that would really motivate you through the training as well. And I think doing London in October is also really good, because you train through the summer months now. So make the most of that, because before you know it, you'll be back to training January, February, and cold, dark mornings and things like that. So, yeah, enjoy the training, enjoy the process of getting to the start line in one piece.
So do you prefer an autumn marathon over a spring marathon then?
I think so, yeah, for the training, just because it's much better time of year to train for it. So
yeah, I'm really looking forward to London this year. I was signed up and I did the virtual, and that was painful, four laps of Tameside.
It's not quite the same, is it?
No, it wasn't. We had some good support on the route, but yeah, it was. I'm looking forward to the day. So we can see from race pictures, you tend to race in a vest with arm sleeves. Mm-hmm. So what's the function behind the arm sleeve? Some people have been debating on fashion, but John McCall asked the question as well on Facebook. So
John McCall asked me a question about fashion. Yeah, just because I look good, John. I mean, I like it, because you don't get as hot. If you wear a T-shirt underneath a vest, if you get hot, you can't just ditch. You can't, you know, that'd be a massive faff. So the fact that you can sort of rip them off and chuck them. For the marathon, when I ran in London, October 2020, it was wet, and it was the first time I've actually grabbed drinks off the table and they slipped through my hands and gloves. So again, like wearing sleeves, certainly for the start of Manchester before drinks, it meant I knew I could grab my drinks safer as well. And if it got too hot, I could take them off. And there's obviously the compression aspect as well. You know, it helps the blood flow and things like that as well.
When did you start wearing them for marathons? Was that mainly for the compression on the arms, or?
I think now. When the team released new ones and they look good.
So it is for fashion.
I'm trying to think. I think I wore them in New York. Yeah, I wore them in New York 2018 because it was cold, simple as that. And do you know what? I think in London as well in 2020 because it was cold. So predominantly it is because it's cold, and I know it's obviously easy to chuck when it gets hot and stuff like that as you get going.
Cool. So before races, we've spoke about this in the past, like any rituals. Do you have any rituals before or during a race?
No, but I guess in terms of my process the week of a marathon, I try and, you know, copy the same foods and the same training and stuff like that, so I guess that is a ritual. But there's nothing kind of mentally or specific that I would do now. But yeah, again, it's quite nice to be flexible if you do go away abroad to race and things like that, and you maybe can't do what you do at home.
And then, so what's a standout race for you for all the right reasons, and equally, what's one of the races that you'd forget or want to forget then happened, and why?
There's a lot I'd like to forget. But you know, I guess Seville stands out for me. It was kind of like my breakthrough in the marathon. You know, it was a run 2:10:03, and myself and Malcolm Hicks had kind of worked hard almost to get a good feel together. You know, there's some top class Europeans there, and we kind of all went through it together, massive group of us, and we all had one goal in mind, that was to qualify for each of our respective countries for the Olympics. And it all just come together on the day. It was just one of them days where we don't have them very often, unfortunately, running. You know, and it was everything come together on the day, and you know, I was able to execute the marathon. The first time I negative split a marathon, and it's just a great city and a perfect, you know, place to go and race as well. So I think it was that, and I think because we'd kind of been through it together, especially with Malcolm, it was kind of like we were kind of working together to get that field together. So that was definitely a highlight. Negative ones, I think probably think back to something like the Commonwealth Games in 2018 in Glasgow, when I dropped out the 10K and I wasn't well. So that's definitely one I'd like to forget. But I do remember one piece of advice from Dave Norman. I think I've dropped out of a race two times in my life. The first was one of the cross-country races in Sefton Park. I remember the night out in Liverpool, you said to me, whatever you do, Johnny, don't drop out of your next race because it becomes a habit.
Yeah. I remember telling you that.
Yeah, so should have told Dan Jarvis that. But anyway, like, so two races, but definitely the Commonwealth Games. To do it on that stage is horrible. And I literally remember wanted to go into the stand. It was at the start of the 100 metre straight, and these marshals would not let me in. I said, please, just need to get back into the changing rooms. And I had to do the walk all the way down the home straight in front of the crowd. It was horrible. It was a horrible moment. I just wanted, you know, the ground to swallow me up. But yeah, so definitely that was probably the one.
Okay. And then who is the toughest British opponent that you've ever come across?
Good question. I'm going to say Andy Vernon, you know. I'm going to take out training partners, people like Ross and Ben, but I'm going to say Andy Vernon. You know, just it was so hard to beat, you know, and not just because he was a big guy on an indoor track either. If it was a fast race, you know, he was, at the times he's run a phenomenal. If it's a tactical race, he could finish, you know, with the best of them sort of thing. So Andy Vernon, I'd probably say. He always seems to get the better of me anyway. So I'd definitely say Andy Vernon. It's such a shame that he's not running anymore as well.
So I've got a couple of listeners' questions now. So first one's from Dominic Sexton. He did ask if you did the beer mile, but we know that we can't ask you that one. So what's your post-long run craving or post-race recovery food?
You can't beat a Coke, can you, after a long run in the summer? You know, I think that's got to be up there. I'd say, like, I've said this before, I think, on the podcast, it's like I feel like I have a good balance in life in that I'm not afraid to have a pizza or a takeaway, you know. I'm not saying I have it once a week, I don't have it that often, but so it's not like necessarily that I think I'm going to go and treat myself to a pizza after this race, because I wouldn't be afraid to have a pizza at any other point in the week anyway. But I think it's just that kind of the downtime after a race, you kind of eat what you want for a little bit longer, I guess. But yeah, things like chocolate milk after a run are always good, but a Coke after a long run in the summer, I don't think you can beat that.
We've had some strange post-long run cravings. What was the one that we had? We had celery.
An apple.
I don't run long for an apple.
Cheesy crumpets is probably the...
Cheesy crumpets
yeah. Up there.
That was a Dave Barrett special, that one.
So Carl Hardman of Salford is asked, if you could pick three key strength and conditioning exercises, what would they be and why?
I think squat, can't beat a squat. I think just for general around conditioning, posture, obviously the glutes, big important one. Single leg deadlift, importance in the hamstrings and glutes, of course, again. And let's throw a core in there, plank or something similar. Just make sure you've got a nice strong trunk for when you're running, to any upper body movements, so you're running nice and efficiently. We'll go for those three.
Cool. That's it from me. So I'm going to pass you over to Dave now. Thank you.
Cheers, Callum. Okay, so Johnny, we've already talked about your early years under Dave Evans, and then the opportunity came up to work with Steve Vernon, who you're now coached by, as part of the Team New Balance Manchester setup. So, firstly, when was this?
I moved over to Steve 2014 and then moved to the team in 2015.
Okay, brilliant. And how did you manage this transition, and what's the professional athlete setup like?
Yeah, so as I say, I was working with Steve in 2014, we'd have a really good year, qualified for the World Indoors, qualified for the Commonwealth Games, I think I'd run PBs over five and things like that, so I had a really good year, really enjoyed the journey with Steve, and then he took a job at New Balance working with Pete Riley, and one of the ideas was to form a team in Manchester, and obviously myself and Ross Millington, who was coached by Steve at the time, was, you know, would you guys be interested in basically living together and starting this team? And I love them to bits, but at the time I was obviously spending a lot of the time with my mother and father-in-law-to-be, so I think we were all fed up with each other, so it was kind of like a great opportunity for me then to move over to Manchester and be part of this team, and I was ready to take the next step in my career. I obviously saw the area in terms of how how much potential it had for runs. We got the track, we had the support from the gyms and things like that. So yeah, it ticked all the boxes, and it was the first professional team of its kind in the UK. And I think, obviously, it's easy to say in hindsight, but I would have been a fool to turn it down, and it was a great opportunity for me. And yeah, I've been part of the team obviously now for, you know, since then, and it's great. I really enjoy it. It's a few people come and gone obviously since the start, but that's part of a professional team in any sport. And yeah, it's good. I think we've got the best out of each other. We've been there for the highs and lows, and, you know, made some great friends from the team, and continue to do so today.
Brilliant. And obviously the group that you're part of is called Team New Balance Manchester, but you're actually, the athlete house is actually based in Marple in Stockport, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So lots of running will be done on routes that are familiar to our listeners.
Team New Balance Marple doesn't quite have the same ring.
Doesn't really, does it? No.
Yeah, Marple's great. We've got, like, there's literally three canals. There's a canal 400 metres from my house. You've got the Middlewood Way, you've got Lion Park, you know, you've got flat running, hilly running. We're 2-3 miles away from Woodbank Park for the track and stuff, so really good location.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? You're really spoilt. So you've already touched on this in your discussion about recovery, but next question was, do you have regular physio, and would you recommend this?
Yeah, I definitely recommend it. Obviously, I know it's a luxury that not everyone can have for whatever reason. I see Chris Brammer once every 4 to 6 weeks, I guess, in the ideal world, for an MOT, just to check everything is moving okay. But obviously there's times when I go to him with a problem or a niggle and say, can we look at this? And then I see Vicky Hales for massage normally once a week as well, and that's just for soft tissue work. So I think, especially as you get older, it's definitely important. And it's almost like that proactive approach to injury prevention rather than reactive. So hopefully we're keeping on top of problems before they come, you know, rather than reacting once you've got a problem.
And with the mileage you're doing, do you get many injuries yourself, or many niggles?
I mean, touch wood, I feel like I've been quite fortunate in my career. Apart from the illness, I've not necessarily had any, you know, serious injuries, apart from the one that I missed the Olympic trials with, but again, that was kind of a fluke incident. So yeah, I'd say, like, I've been quite fortunate in my career through managing it well, a good team around me. Steve's obviously been really cautious with the training as well, you know, we're sensible with what we do, we don't take unnecessary risks and stuff like that. And, you know, look after myself as well, you know, make sure I get enough sleep and do all those sort of recovery things as well.
Okay, and obviously you're quite late on into your running career now, but what's your one running dream for the future?
I mean, I guess that Olympics still there for me, you know, and whether I keep, you know, who knows, but I guess the Olympics, you know, it's every runner's dream, isn't it, really, to compete in the Olympics, you know. 209 would be lovely as well, or a 2-0 for the marathon, let's not put limits on it, would also be up there as a dream of mine.
Yeah, and you're so close. What's your current PB?
2:10:03.
Yeah.
I'd love to say if I'd have seen the clock, I'd have got more out of myself, but I don't. 3 seconds over a marathon.
I mean, the reality is, you know, if you didn't follow the shortest line, you probably did under that 2:10. Yeah. So how long do you plan to continue running at this level?
I don't know is the honest answer. As long as I'm still enjoying it and I'm injury free, then, I mean, I don't, if you'd have asked me last year, I would have said no. But, could you know, Chris Thompson, Andy Davies, they're guys that I sort of look up to now and see them running so well into their 40s, you know, or, you know, why not? But at the same time, I just don't know what's around the corner. But providing I'm still enjoying it and I'm still running well, then yeah, I'll keep going, really.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You're running PBs at the moment, so, you know, if you're running PBs, there's every reason to continue, particularly with those carrots of international selection. So do you use any fancy tools to aid recovery, things like cryo chambers, ice baths, that type of thing?
I hate ice baths, so definitely no to cryo chamber. Like, there's some studies out there now that say heat is better, so I'm all for that. And, like, the amount of arguments I had with Steve over the years, getting an ice bath, and I hate them. Yeah, I'm not good with the cold, so no. I mean, I have Normatec, I have a massage gun. That's about as fancy as it gets for me, really.
Yeah, brilliant. And we do see a lot of elite athletes going away on training camps. Can you explain what happens on these elite getaways?
It's not the same as it used to be in the olden days. I think they used to have a big piss up, didn't they, on the first night and then one on the last night. That doesn't happen anymore. It certainly doesn't happen with our camps anyway. I think it's just a time you can go away and focus, you know, really kind of don't have the distractions that you would do at home. We don't necessarily go there and train any harder than we would do normally. Certainly at altitude, you can't do that necessarily anyway. So I think it's just the chance to go and train somewhere inspiring and, you know, just have those less distractions really, and depending on what you're training for, obviously you might go there for heat as well, for the benefits of that. And in terms of what happens, literally nothing, especially if you go somewhere like Semeritz, because it's so expensive to go out for coffee or food or anything like that. You can't anyway, so you just you run in and you're recovering, and that's obviously why they work well.
When you were mentioning about a change of scenery there, the first thing that came into my mind was those photos from Semeritz, because it just looks such a special place. I've never been, but it looks amazing.
Yeah, it's unreal. It really is. And, you know, yeah, it's just a fantastic, fantastic place. Trails are just, they're dreamy, and they're really good underfoot as well. You know, we're not going on sort of single track rocky trails or anything like that, you know. So you're not, it's just, and again, like in Marple, you've got flat running, you've got hilly running, you've got an airport loop, which is 5K around. You know, it's ideal for marathon training. Can be a bit windy, but again, it's just all extra training. Really nice track, and just like a really inspiring place to go and train, really.
Okay. So how does your coach supply your training plan? Do you get it in full on a weekly basis or fortnightly basis, or is it sort of more day to day?
A weekly basis, but again, we're not afraid to kind of adjust as and when if we need to, you know, for whatever reason, if I'm tired or I have got a niggle or something like that, then we're not afraid to kind of adjust it as we go. So predominantly on a weekly basis, training will be living on a Sunday, to kind of look forward to what you've got coming up the next week. But again, we'll chat in advance, so we'd have a rough plan of maybe what we have coming up. But again, that's subject to change, and we'll kind of adjust it for any number of reasons, really, you know, and might race might crop up that you think that's worth doing, things like that. Or you might feel a bit flat in training, in which case you think, oh, I might need a race, or I might need a slightly faster session, whatever it is, to kind of liven things up. So yeah, on a weekly basis.
Okay. So we've got a question from Ben Riddell. He says, will Johnny be self-coached going forward? And if so, what aided this decision? So I'm assuming this question follows on from the news about Steve, your coach, being offered a new role at UK Athletics.
Yeah, and obviously massive, you know, congratulations to Steve. Obviously gutted, of course I am, but I'm also delighted for Steve, you know, because he deserves it, and British Athletics is in a better place for Steve being there, and I genuinely do mean that. But Helen's going to be, you know, leading the team, and I'm going to start working with Helen. But yeah, Ben's right, with a bit more of my own sort of input in there as well, which I'm excited for and looking forward to as well. But Helen will be leading moving forwards.
Yeah,
that's Helen Clitheroe.
Helen Clitheroe, yep. Again, fantastic coach, got a great track record, and I'm sure she'll be great for the group.
Yeah, and she, you know, Helen's got so much experience as well, and she's been there and done it herself. So again, I'm excited for that, and I know for a fact Steve wouldn't be leaving if he didn't think his baby was in good hands. So, you know, I trust that.
Yeah, it's a fantastic opportunity for him, so well done from us all. Okay, so you train and race in some great locations. Where is the best place you've trained, and where's the best place you've raced?
Training, I probably would say Semeritz, for the reasons you mentioned before, but I also love Albuquerque. Just something about the place, because it's nowhere near as kind of beautiful as Semeritz, but it's just a great place to train. There's just something about Albuquerque as well as a place. Plus you've got the tempo path, just really cool. I'd go for Semeritz, but Albuquerque very close second. Racing, I remember going, I did the World Mountain Running Champs, believe it or not, in 2005 in Wellington, New Zealand. That was very good. Was you Andy on the team?
He was in the junior team. No, he was in the senior team. You were in the junior team. Yeah. He was in the senior team.
So that was obviously very cool. New York for the marathon. Done the half marathon there twice in the marathon. And probably something like Palo Alto for Stanford. So I'm just listing a load of races here. I'm not giving you my favourite, because it's too hard to pick. All round experience, probably New York.
Yeah, fantastic. So can you tell us a bit about your marathon build up? What would your training build up look like, and what would your fueling strategy be before, during, and after?
Yeah, so with the marathon, we tend to kind of, I guess, get in good 10K shape, half marathon shape early on, so we're fit, but we're still fast as well, because I think too many people maybe get a bit one pace and a bit slow when they're training for a marathon. So we like to keep fast, especially now the marathon's moved on a little bit. So we'll do that early on in the phase, and then we'll kind of move into the specific marathon sessions, you know, the sort of, obviously the ones that a lot of people do now is the kilometer on, kilometer off, things like that. The more specific long runs, maybe with efforts in. And we'll at all state, you know, we're still keeping in touch with track work as well. You know, keeping in some 10K sessions there, but all big volume sessions, maybe things like 15 by K on the track. And then as we kind of get closer, obviously start tapering down, you know, and things like half marathon at goal marathon pace, I think is always a good session to do at that stage. And then fueling, I don't do anything fancy because I just think it's too much of a risk for a stomach upset. So I eat the same for the majority of the week, and then literally the final couple of days start eating more, you know, just slightly bigger portions, getting a few extra treats in there as well, more fuel for the fire.
And gels, do you bother with gels? Because we've had this discussion on a few of our podcasts.
Yeah, so I, again, like really fortunate that I can have drinks on this tables. So I have like OT supercarbs, so I'll drink that every 5 kilometres. I take a gel in my shorts and I attach a gel to my bottles. That's in case I miss a bottle, I'll have a gel. Or potentially if my stomach's off, I'll then maybe have a gel instead of my drink. I've got that option if it's on my bottle. So yeah, I mean, in training I'll have gels because it's just, you know, it's not possible for someone to be on the bike for all your long runs. So when that's not the case, I will have gels. But if not, yeah, drink. I'll go for supercarbs.
Yeah. I'll just rewind a bit there. So you mentioned the K on, K off session.
Yeah.
What would that look like, just for our listeners?
So that would be like a kilometre slightly quicker than marathon pace, and then a kilometre slightly slower than marathon pace. You know, so.
And how long would you do that for?
Between 16 and 20 kilometres. So okay. If you're doing 20, 10 kilometres slightly faster than marathon pace, 10 kilometres slightly slower than marathon pace.
Okay.
And I think it's just a really good sustained way of hitting marathon pace or slightly harder.
And the other one I wanted to touch back on was when you mentioned you do a half marathon at goal marathon pace. Yep. As part of your build-up. I've seen you've sometimes done that in a low-key race event.
Yeah. So we've done like Lake Vyrnwy, which is a brilliant half marathon, by the way. I think it's very underrated, should I say, sorry. It's mid-Wales, but it's around, you know, Lake Vyrnwy, obviously. And so you go up for a mile, and then 11 miles pancake flat, and then down for a mile. So it's really quick, it's got a lot of potential. You know, if they had an elite field there, you could get some seriously fast times. So I've done that a couple of times before Berlin in September. I think I did Cheshire Half before London in 2020 with the other guys that were racing, and we did Wimsey this year as well. So yeah, I just think it works really well. Final dress rehearsal, the kit, nutrition, you know, really get dialed into that pace as well.
Yeah, and what would your mileage look like in a marathon build-up normally?
So it's actually come down. I maybe used to run more, but again, I've done 10 marathons now, so kind of that background and that volume's there. I don't necessarily need to run the 120 mile a week anymore, and I just kind of get a bit dead leg now, so I'd say I'm around the 110 mark really when I'm at,
yeah,
you know, peak marathon mileage.
And what would your tape look like?
So it would be from 110, I'd maybe come down potentially 3 weeks out if I'm a bit tired. I may come down to the sort of the 100-105 mark, but all the, you know, depends again with races and stuff like that what I've got on. And then it'd be like an 80. And then race week with the marathons about 70, 75 normally.
Yeah, brilliant. And do you do anything else, any other physical activity apart from running? Do you do any gym or bike work or swimming or anything like that?
So I'll gym twice a week. I don't really do any other cross training anymore. I used to obviously swim, but I don't do that anymore. So I just run. Just obviously so time consuming and you're tired from all the run training. So again, it might be something I look at down the line, adding a bit more of that in. But obviously gym's really important for me, and I put that in there twice a week and then once a week on race week.
Okay, thank you. So we've got some listener questions as well. The first one is from Steve Mende via email. Steve asks, would be great to hear Johnny talk about if he incorporates hills into his training to get strength in his legs for marathons. For example, does he use them far out from the event or for the whole training block? And does he use them for easy runs or on specific sessions like hill sprints?
Yeah, definitely. Especially where we live, you can't really avoid them. So hills are a big part of what we do. Again, that would be included in that sort of an early phase when you're getting in good 10K shape. So we do hills then. And then obviously we don't really do specific sessions later into the build-up. But a lot of our running is, should we say, undulating. You know, Interline Park and things like that is rolling hills. Lady Bar Reservoir, of course. So I think... yeah, we're not afraid to hit the hills, you know, and it's very rare we'll just go out and back.
And I've seen you and your training group running around Lady Bar. You certainly don't hang around on some of those runs.
No. But Lady Bar is great because the terrain means you can run fast on it.
Yeah,
you know,
you can.
You're not stopping for gates and stuff all the time either, so it's perfect for that.
Yeah, okay. And next question's from Adam Battersby from Mossley Running Club. Adam wants to know, what's your usual pre-race warm-up routine before a race? Does your warm-up distance change depending on the race? Do you do stretches or drills or anything like that as part of your warm-up?
Yeah, and yes. So it does change for the races. So if I was just going to race a 10K, I'd do like a 20-minute warm-up just to get everything going. Then I'd do drills So that would consist of like dynamic stretching and then maybe some activation drills as well, you know, just I guess form drills, get everything fired up and get everything ready, and then I'd do some strides before the race. Then I'd change into my flats and race kit, and then obviously race. With the marathon, we'd only really jog for like 10 minutes, do a 10 minute jog, a few light drills. You don't need to really get all G'd up, and you don't need all the activation drills and stuff like that, so do that, and then obviously race.
Brilliant. Okay, right, well, that's everything from me. Thank you so much, Johnny. I'm now going to pass you on to Sean.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Good to meet you, Johnny. So just going back to a little bit of what you touched on earlier about marathon sessions, I don't know if it's... there seems to be a lot of people doing these, including myself. You mentioned the 1K on, 1K off. What would be your favourite marathon session you do, and how far out from a race would you recommend doing those kind of sessions?
I think it probably would be the half marathon at race pace, because it's kind of almost like everything coming together. You get to that point where you're just ready to taper. I'd probably say that one. I've done it a couple of times where I did tempo and then a race. I did that with Trafford this year, and I've done it with Alsager in the past, so I'd enjoy that as well. But I think probably the half at sort of your goal race pace, I think it's just kind of, you kind of know where you're at then, you know how you feel, and obviously it's never going to feel great. But for me, that's the one I'd probably enjoy the most, really, as well, because it's the fun bit, really, when you're getting ready to race.
Yeah, interesting. And on the talking about tune-up races, on the build-up to Manchester Marathon, you ran some fantastic times. You ran 10K PB in Valencia, 2 seconds off a PB at Trafford 10K, and a half marathon PB in Seville. So what is it you've changed in this particular training block, do you think, that got such good results in that marathon build?
Do you know what? Not a lot, really. But I think my mindset maybe changed a little bit. You know, I think I also had opportunities that maybe I haven't had before. Getting in some of these races, like a Valencia 10K, it's not always easy as it sounds. So to get that opportunity to go and race Valencia was obviously good to kind of, you know, give me the opportunity to do that. That helped. Obviously, I had perfect weather at Trafford. It was a, you know, good day. Seville, I was actually disappointed with, because I felt like I was in shape to go quicker. I was supposed to be doing a race somewhere else and it got cancelled. So I literally entered Seville on the Wednesday before the race. I'd done a big session on the Tuesday, and the race we thought would be better than it was, but I ran the majority of it on my own. So I'm not making excuses and having a sob story here, but because I ran a PB and I was obviously really, really happy to run a PB, but at the same time, I felt like I could run quicker. So it was kind of a bittersweet PB, that one, to be fair. I'm going to swear now, so you get ready to beat this one out. But I think I also thought, fuck it, because I'm coming towards the end of my career. I'm realistic. I know that. I'm not naive to that, because I am. You know, whether I go for another 5 years or whether I go for another 2 years, you know, I haven't got that many more opportunities left. I've obviously started doing a lot more work now. So the pressure's off, and maybe, you know, after last year as well, everything that I went through last year with the Olympics and stuff like that, and I, you know, seriously thought about packing it all in then as well, especially from the Olympics then going into London and running really, you know, having a disappointing run in London. I certainly contemplated then when we were on holiday, you know, potentially stopping then, sort of thing. You know, I had a couple opportunities job wise as well that I could have potentially taken, you know, and I'm glad I didn't. Everything works out for whatever reason. But I think there's a lot of that mindset, and again, going back to the cross country earlier in the podcast, talking about doing something that I enjoy, I kind of thought, I love doing what I do. I'm really fortunate to do what I do, and it's kind of been a bit more of a, do you know what, so let's just go out there and do it. And yeah, I think that's what's really helped, and that's why, because I've normally not really ran well in a marathon build-up, because it's all been all about the marathon. But this time it's just kind of been a bit more, oh well, just kind of take it as it comes, and I'm not running with as much pressure, I don't think, on myself now, which I really want to kind of keep going, obviously. But again, from a training perspective, we've probably done a little bit faster stuff over Christmas time to get ready for Valencia. Because we weren't actually going to do a marathon this spring, the focus was going to kind of be on the short distance stuff. But yeah, I'm glad it is Manchester now, obviously, as well. So yeah. The long-winded answer to your question, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, it kind of just brings me on to the next question, really. I mean, so those kind of races that you built, put into a marathon build-up, are you racing them, or are they almost like controlled efforts?
So Valencia was a race, and Seville was a race. Yeah. Trafford and Wimslow weren't. Like, Trafford was supposed to be a hard training session, but I just felt good. You know, Andrew assures me the course was legit, which it was, obviously. but you know, that was just a a bit of a, I don't know, I just ran pretty well that day, I guess, but it wasn't meant to be that. The plan was to kind of go and run. We kind of, honestly, we were thinking about maybe running something like 29 low. That was the plan.
Yeah,
I felt good, and I could sense there was an opportunity to try and win the race, so I sort of took that chance. Probably went a little bit too early, but it was kind of like, yeah, it just one of the days when it, again, a bit like Swirl, I guess, when it clicks together.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because if you're thinking, oh, I'm going to go into this as a controlled effort, sometimes you take pressure off yourself.
Yeah.
By doing that, I guess. So just going on to footwear, we always ask footwear questions on this podcast. What shoes did you run Manchester Marathon in?
The New Balance RC Elite Version 2s.
Yeah, and are they your go-to racing
footwear? Yeah. The V1s are good as well, because they've got a slightly more aggressive grip on them. So if it's wet, I think I wore them in Ribble Valley, for example, over Christmas. I do wear them. But, yeah, I mean, again, it's hard for me to say because I've only wore those in terms of carbon shoes, so I can't compare them to another brand. But for me, they work really well. I really like them. You're probably not the best person to ask, I guess.
Well, what about in training? What would be a training shoe in the New Balance?
Yeah, so I wear the 1080s for day-to-day running. So again, they're just my daily workhorse. They do the job. They kind of, just a really good shoe. But I like them. The fact that, so those sort of runs we're talking about around Lady Bar, I wear them for that as well. A lot of the stuff I wear the 1080s for, because they're very responsive still, and I feel like I can still run quick in them. Which again, for a day-to-day shoe, which gives you the cushioning, I think is a really good kind of, if it does both, then happy days.
Yeah. I've never tried New Balance, actually. I think I tried the 1080s maybe some years ago, I imagine the models changed quite a bit since then.
Yeah, certainly evolved,
Dave, you know, V12 around that?
V12, just launched.
So just going back to the Manchester Marathon, that was an interesting race, really. I felt how it panned out, so I felt that you nailed the race. Of course, you sat in that group and then seemed to just kick on in the last 10K. But when a runner goes off the front as hard as Matt did on that day, what goes on in the pack there? Is there any discussion around that, or do you allow them to go so far then bring them back, or do you just let the race sort itself out?
I think we just let the race sort itself out. I mean, there's absolutely no disrespect to Matt at all. That's how he likes to race. He ran a PB, so fair play to him. It's not how I'd choose to run a marathon, granted. It was a bit mad, wasn't it? But that's how Matt races, and like, there was no surprise, we knew that was coming. And again, but the marathon is such a long way. I don't think there was, again, I'm not disrespecting Matt at all, but that wasn't sustainable. I don't know what his splits were in terms of his first mile.
Well, to put it into perspective, I think your first mile was bang on 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And you averaged probably what?
I think it was 4:57. 4:57. Like
Matt's first mile was 4:45.
Yeah.
And I think he averaged maybe 5:17s.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was actually, do you know what? Not the worst bit, but where I think he made the biggest mistake, if 4:45 in your first mile of a marathon isn't, it was around 10 miles. And the group caught him up, and he sort of got sort of swallowed into the group. And then most people, I think, and my advice would be, sit at the back of the group and kind of recover, take a couple of miles kind of thing. He surged back to the front, and he did that 3 times.
Matt's actually got his own podcast, and I actually listened to it, and he said the reason he ran the way he did and why he runs the way he does is because he doesn't feel comfortable running in a pack.
Yeah, and that's what he said to me after the race as well.
And that was why, when you caught him, that he kicked on again.
Okay, that makes sense.
But he said he actually regrets that, because he said it was a bit foolish.
Yeah, I mean, Matt's a great guy, and he's had some really great times. So that's how he chooses to race. That's his tactics. Then, good luck to him. It's not how I would choose to run a marathon personally. That's all.
Was there much discussion in the pack?
No, not really. I think, it was obviously a bit of was like, wow, because he's gone off so quick. You all focus, you're all in the zone, you're kind of all, marathon for me is just getting into that rhythm and getting,
I guess the other element was there were pacemakers in there try and help the guys to run. It wasn't actually aimed to run at 2:10,
no,
was it?
No, initially. The plan was 2:14, I believe, or was it slightly quicker maybe, because Kev Seawood had the Irish time was a little bit quicker. But I didn't hear anyone sort of complain at any point that it was too fast. It was kind of like everyone just sort of got on it, and that was it. And normally you may sort of say easy or whatever to the pacemakers to back off if they are going too fast or whatever, but I didn't hear that on the day myself. Maybe someone did, but so yeah, I didn't really look at time until we got to 10 miles, and that's where first time I was like, oh, we're actually up on where we're supposed to be.
I watched the Boston Marathon. Boston Marathon was late last year, wasn't it? And a runner did the same there, actually, if I remember. Went really hard off the front, yeah, but way, way up the road, and the same result. And the group chased them down, but
I've got to say though, I'd give an arm and a leg to be running in that group. I don't know about you lot, but
I know, I don't know what we'd done to upset Mark. We obviously didn't want to run with us.
Maybe a mile.
Yeah.
Okay, I've lost where I'm up to now in the questions. Okay, so, yeah, just going back to paces, really. I think Dave just touched on it. So in the major races, we always see lots of paces. And we saw that at Manchester as well. So you had three pacemakers from your team.
Yeah.
So how key are they, and how do pacers work within races?
Yeah, they're very key because they're just kind of, like I said, I didn't look at pace until 10 miles because I trust those guys, especially because they're my teammates. It's kind of like I know they're going to be there or thereabouts. You know, so it's kind of, it's one less thing to worry about, I guess. You just kind of, this is the pace we're going to go at. Perfect. And we just sit on that, you know, and yeah, I think they're very important. Obviously, you've seen people like Elliot doing his sub two and how important the pacemakers were and what sort of role they played in that and things. So it's very important, and it just helps you settle down. One less thing to worry about, and you can just literally get dialed in and focus on running the pace that they're setting. So it's good, especially when they're, you know, your teammates and things like that as well.
Yeah. And do you know when they're going to drop out? Is that pre-agreed?
Yeah. So like Adam was, he would go 10 max. Charlie was going to go halfway, and Ben was going to go up to 25k. The only shock was Paulos. We didn't realise he was a pacemaker as well, and there was talk he was going to go the whole way. There was talk he was going to go 30k, and he dropped out. I can't remember what part he dropped out now as well. So that was the only thing on the day that we didn't actually know. But in terms of the other pacemakers at the meeting the day before, it was kind of all agreed where they were going to go to and what pace they were going to aim to hit.
Interesting. I always look at paces because I remember Jake Smith in Cheshire last year, just ran the whole race and ran away from the group.
I've done it once before in Valencia myself, and I enjoyed it. I was actually probably more nervous for that than I am from racing myself, because you've got to get it right for other people. So yeah, I mean, I remember as well, I think, was Charlie making his debut? I can't remember if it was his debut or I think it must have been his second marathon, and he got giddy just after halfway, and I just remember Charlie come back because I just knew. And you know, he ran a PB definitely that day, so I can't remember if it was the first one, but he ran well anyway. And whereas Andy Davies sort of come off the back because he was being sensible. Andy Davies is obviously, in terms of tactics for races, spot on. And whereas Charlie was getting giddy and kind of getting carried away. So I remember actually saying to him, get back, Charlie, sort of thing. So it worked out well for him in the end, unless he would have maybe run quicker, I guess. But yeah.
So just sticking with Manchester then, and about that race that you ran, you sort of kicked on and ran the I think the last final 10k in sub 30. So was that also part of the plan, or did you just feel good enough to accelerate to that?
A bit of both. You know, the plan was obviously to kind of sit and make the most of having a group, especially because it was going a little bit quicker. Perfect. So that was always kind of the plan, to kind of feel good. Obviously, if you feel good, push on in the closing stages. And yeah, I felt good, so I was able to keep pushing all the way to the finish.
Yeah, you certainly look strong on the footage when we're watching.
I did a couple of years ago before London. We couldn't find a half marathon 2 weeks out, so instead we did a 10-mile tempo that day, and I decided I'd go and do it on the Manchester Marathon course, because it's obviously ahead of the race, closed roads, happy, you know, really good. So I'd done a bit of the course already in a training run, I guess, even though it was a couple of years ago. So I was familiar with the Altrincham section, and I know that was a tough section, because we literally looked at the splits from that tempo before the race, and I'd been like 5 minutes, 4:59, literally smack on for 9 of the 10 miles, and the Altrincham mile was a 5:10. You know, so just we knew we were ready for Altrincham being tough. So it's kind of like get through Altrincham, get past Altrincham, then kind of assess where we're at, and then, you know, make a decision then.
Yeah, I suppose there's a big part of it, that mental. You've got almost like an advantage there, haven't you, in a way?
Yeah.
So one of the pictures of the moment was your training partner, Ros Millington, crossing the line behind you at Manchester, and you both got big smiles on your faces and looked genuinely made up for each other. Can you tell us a bit about that relationship with yourself and Ros?
Yeah, I mean, we were. We, Me and Mass, we trained together since 2014. He's obviously one of my best friends. He was an usher at my wedding. We've been through the highs and lows, and that lad's suffered, unfortunately, too many lows with injuries over the years. You know, I think just shows when he's fit and when he's training what he can achieve, you know. And when he obviously went to Rio and the Olympics over 10K, I think that proves the type of athlete Ross is. You know, he's a fantastic runner. He really is, and he works so hard. And as a teammate, I want to win the race, but I want to look around and I want to see him finishing second. You know, and I'm sure it's the other way around for him. He wants to win and turn around and see me coming second. So to see that sort of black and yellow vest coming out, I was so happy to see that. So, and you know, Ross secured his place in the championship this summer as well. And as I say, with the, you know, he had surgery last, he's had two surgeries now in the last couple of years, but he had surgery last summer. So to bounce back from that and to kind of... he's not here, mate.
Yeah. Cheers for that.
That's an edit.
You can't edit that out. Yeah.
Mr. Beastburger.
Okay, so yeah, you know, obviously everything Ross has been through, I'm just so happy for him. And because of what we talked again about Steve earlier as well, I think that was like the perfect send off for Steve almost, and the perfect like thank you, you know, because I know he was so happy, you know, for what we achieved as well, and for the team. I think it was a massive moment to finish 1-2 in a race, especially when it's Team New Balance Manchester and we've finished 1-2 in the Manchester Marathon, teammates, pacing involved and things like that. So, and again, doing a race so close to home with your family and stuff like that and your friends there, that was really special as well. And Ross obviously had the same, so it was a big moment for us both. And both, you know, we trained for this marathon together, so we probably spent more time with Ross training for the marathon than I've done with my wife in the build-up to it. So it's kind of, that, it's just really special. And I think when you've trained and invested so much in someone, and he's invested so much in you as well and helped each other through ups and downs, it's a good moment.
Yeah, perfect. And it's a proper team sport, really. It doesn't always look that way sometimes, running, does it? It can be quite a long
but that's sport. When it is a team as well.
Yeah, brilliant. So something we have talked quite a bit about on the podcast recently, well, since we started, and something I struggle with is the mental side of running, but marathon running in particular. So we've talked about different ways we break the race down. I think, Dave, you've talked about using time instead of miles as one other option. So do you have any tips that you use mentally to break down the marathon distance and get through it?
Yeah, again, like process goals, so similar to what Dave, in terms of time. I'll break it down to process goals. I read something in a book once, and it was like, if I asked you to eat an elephant, you wouldn't eat it all in one go. You know, you'd break it down into bits, wouldn't you? So 26 miles, 42K, whatever, whichever way you split it, it's a long way, you know, so you have to break it down, make it seem more achievable, you know, get to whatever you, however you break it down, whether it's 5K sections, 10K sections. The one I quite like is 10 miles, 20 miles, 10K, you know, so the 3 10s. Or what I did for Manchester, I was like halfway, 20 miles, finish, you know, so I broke it down to three that way. So however it makes the distance seem less daunting in your mind and more achievable to hit those times, do it. And again, it doesn't have to be just for the marathon, it can be for shorter distance as well, but I think it's really important. And then you stay in the moment, you stay focused on whatever bit of the, you know, whether you're getting to halfway, don't think any further than halfway, don't start thinking about the end result and the outcome, just get to halfway and then reassess, I guess, from there.
How did you find that, you know, the laps course they put on in London? How did you find that mentally?
So I really enjoyed that, and I can see why people wouldn't, but I just kind of, the mental aspect is we just switched off. It was just literally run. All I was thinking about was running, just following the guy in front of me, and I didn't give it any more thought than that. London, that's one of the things maybe with London as well. You can get distracted because there's so much going on. There's so, you know, and you hear a voice from family and friend or whatever, or you know, and different landmarks and stuff like that. So for that course, for me, it was just mentally just switch off. And I can see why it's boring for some people, but maybe perhaps even the swimming back in the day, you know, it kind of built up that mental resilience. I don't know, but I enjoyed it. You know, it was obviously a fast course as well.
Yeah, I quite like laps, mate. I think because I could, cause say it's like, I don't know, it was 19 laps. I think that was actually.
but break it down. It's just lap at a time. One more lap, and you know, before you know it, you were getting the bell, which is a bit real. You know, weird in the marathon getting a bell.
Must have been nice
track
to hear that bell. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because it was rough weather as well, wasn't it? That day.
At least the girls' race was worse because they started before the men's race. You know, 2.5 hours before. I think it was dark on the start line. It was, so we definitely got the better of the weather that day, but Ethan still, it wasn't a nice day.
remember seeing Steph Twell, and I think it was Lily Partridge, and they had jackets on for the first 10K. Yeah.
Which is, again, like, you know, some of the feedback for Olympic trials is like, don't start it as early, because it could, I think, was it March? And it could be anything in March, and you're starting that early again, like, almost learn the lesson, you know, so, yeah.
And after Manchester Marathon, that success, how did you celebrate?
We went for pizza. So there's like a canal boat near ours, and the dog loves it because they give the dog treats. So he'll sit and wait at the canal boat waiting for a treat. And they do pizza as well, certainly like on certain days anyway. And so we went for pizza with the family there. And then we went to, it's called the Shrub Club in New Mills. So all the team got together, and like sort of significant others, whatever, we all kind of went. You know, some drank more than others. Name names, Ben Connor. You know, it was just a nice night out with the team, I guess. Especially because of what had happened with Steve that week and stuff like that. It was nice to kind of go out away from training and just have a night out as a team. And, you know, obviously with some family members and stuff there as well. So that was really nice. And I'll be honest, I left about 8:15 back home to watch some Netflix and watch the day because I was knackered. So it was, it really, yeah, it wasn't that exciting. But yeah, I enjoyed it.
Favourite pizza?
Like something with chicken on, which I know is not really for pizza, but chicken and peppers is one of that I really like, you know.
Pineapple?
No, not pizza.
Well, it's a bit so much debated topic, that, isn't it? And what's next for Johnny Miller?
Manchester 10K, if we're talking race-wise, you know, in terms of my next sort of goal, you know, right, next race, okay, will be Manchester 10K. In terms of deeper, I'm not sure really. I'd say I'm just happy in doing what I'm doing at the moment. Hopefully it's a championship in the summer, and again I'd love to try and get that 2:09, so much of the same really in terms of what's next. And I'm not necessarily thinking any further ahead than that at the moment as well, because I'm enjoying where I am at the moment. I'm enjoying the training, looking forward to Manchester. I've not done Manchester 10K for a long time now, so I'm looking forward to getting out there and doing that one again.
Nice one. And we've got a listener question in from Andy Jones, who asks Liverpool or Man City to win the league?
Say the best question to last. Well, I mean, it's two of the best teams in the world, and I've certainly the best Liverpool team I've ever watched going head to head. It's great, isn't it? I mean, Liverpool have got the harder fixtures, but I think it's also nice to be chasing now as well. You know, the pressure's on City, I guess, after the weekend. So it's we've got the FA Cup first, and then I think we've got United next Tuesday, Everton, Villarreal, and then Spurs as well. You know, I think they're all home, but still it's a tough run of fixtures. But they've got Madrid, haven't they? So it's let's get Saturday out of the way first. And but yeah, it's great. You know, I don't know if we'll see sort of two teams as good as this going head to head again, getting the most out of each other as well. So I'm enjoying it. I don't know if I'll enjoy Saturday again. Like Sunday was quite stressful, so we'll see.
Yeah, okay.
So I just wanted to ask Johnny, I see on social media, I think I've seen you running with your wife as well, so can you just tell us a little bit about that? Do you tend to go out together or do you train separately?
It's a cheap way of date night, isn't it? Go for a run. Saves me a few quid. So no, it's good because it helps me run easy sometimes. You know, all due respect to Sophie, of course, but it's kind of like, if I just want to go for a nice easy run, and you know what, you joke, it's a nice way to catch up and stuff as well, and you know, if she's working full time and whatever, and you know, don't get to see each other as much as we'd like, so yeah, it's a nice way to do it. We'll go running with the dog sometimes and things like that as well, so yeah, it's a nice way of keeping the runs nice and easy and stuff like that as well.
And can the dog keep up?
He can do well, he's done a few 6 milers now. But when I was in Valencia, I was talking to one of the Geordie guys, I can't remember, Carl Avery, sorry, and he had Labradors growing up as well, and he said it's like a boredom thing with them, so they can do it, they can run for longer, but they get bored. And I was like, yeah, that's him, because sometimes we'll do a run and it's, you know, 4th mile they start lagging behind a bit. I'm like, come on. But then in the last mile they'll get zoomies and he's sprinting up and down. I'm like, so he's not like, he's not knackered. So his PB is like 34.5 for 5 miles, so it's not bad, that is it, for a Labrador. So he's
has he got a Strava account?
No, he's no Strava account. He's no Kipchoge Sessman either. But he tries his hardest, and that's all that matters. No,
Johnny, we had a discussion earlier on about Strava and keeping some of your activities private, or what other people might potentially think of you putting your runs on Strava. So do you tend to put all your runs on Strava, and what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think pretty much all mine are on there. I say, like, I've got nothing to hide in that. There's no sort of secrets to what I do. It's quite simple training. I think it's nice for people to look at and see as well, you know. I'm not afraid to share that. I can understand again why people may hide stuff, but it's going to come out when you race anyway, isn't it, I guess. So it's quite nice, and I think Strava is a really useful tool. It's not for everyone, and that's absolutely fine as well, you know. I totally understand if you hate Strava and you hate everything it stands for, that's fine, but I think it's a useful tool, and if it works for you, then great. If it doesn't, don't use it. It's simple as that, really.
And we've had quite a bit of discussion on previous episodes about pace of easy runs. What would a pace of a typical easy run look like for you?
It varies. You know, I'll maybe start off at like 7:30 and get down towards 6:30 by the end of a run, but I don't really look. It's kind of all based on feel, how I feel on that particular day, the terrain, the weather, whatever it is, you know. But like I said before, if I need to go out running easy with Sophie or the dog, then I'm not afraid to do that. So I always think junk mileage is maybe when you're going too fast to get any sort of physiological benefit, but you're going too fast not to recover, but you're not going easy enough to, oh god, that's really messed up now. Sorry, you're going too fast, so you're not going to recover, but you're not going fast enough to get any physiological benefit. I got there. And I think that for me is the grey area. So I think it's interesting, but I don't really look at the pace of my easy runs. I think probably on average it works out around 6:50 to 7 minute pace on average for most of my easy running. But you forget, like, a lot of the stuff I do is quite early as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Cheers.
Well, that's it for all the questions from us. So really, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate you taking the time out.
Thanks for the questions. They're really good questions as well. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Johnny.
Yeah, cheers, Johnny. Lovely to meet you.
Thanks for coming on, Johnny. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you to Bucket Zone for sponsoring this episode of the Local Runners Podcast. Don't forget, if you're an event organiser and would like to discover the benefits of listing your next race for entry, why not visit bucketzone.com to find out more, or give them a call and mention the Local Runners Podcast. Listing is absolutely free and puts your race within the reach of over 200,000 registered UK athletes. To find your next race, or to find out more about listing your event for entry, visit bucketzone.com. Bucketzone.com. List, search, and enter events online.
That's it for this episode. In our next episode, we'll be speaking to a Hyde Village strider, second claim to Saddleworth Runners, an active member of Vegan Runners, also managing Tameside Vegan Runners. She'll be tackling the Braithwaite 10 Marathons in 10 days in Windermere in May. She's also a regular parkrun visitor and has run 109 parkruns to date at 58 different locations, as well as volunteering 86 times. We will be speaking to Joe Edgerton. So get those questions in for Joe in the usual ways: Facebook, Instagram, Twitter and email. And remember, the sky has no limit, and neither should you. Good night.